It is 80 degrees here in the Twin Cities, 609. Esme Murphy with you on this Saturday night. Great to be back on Saturday night. Well, along with my friend Jonathan Lowe. How are you doing, Mr. Lowe?
She's back.
Well, I did take a couple of Saturdays off just because I kind of needed a break.
You know, because I was driving you crazy. You can
No. But, you know, just sometimes you just need a break. So while it's wonderful to be back, it was nice to have a little time off. And great to be back here. I got to tell you, though, my goodness, it feels steamy in the studio tonight. Normally it's the reverse. I mean, I normally come here with a jacket or a blanket.
All I'm saying is, yes, it is not as warm in the hallways of WCCO as it is here in the studio. But unfortunately, you're complaining to the wrong guy because I am completely fine with it.
All right. Well, I know Steve Thompson was also complaining a little bit. But anyway, we have a great show lined up for you, and it is great to be back. 8 o'clock, we will talk with Dave Schultz about politics. As always, an awful lot going on. We also have coming up in this hour a discussion about the Mayo Clinic pulling back services at its facility in Albert Lea. A lot of controversy there. And I think it is part of a larger story about healthcare in rural or smaller cities, not just here in Minnesota, but across the country, premiums that have been affected, the kinds of insurance that's available. I mean, I think it's really something, it's part of this overall healthcare debate, and I think it needs to be addressed because this is something that obviously, while yes, this is about Albert Lea, it's also about a larger problem within the system. And then we are also going to be talking this hour in our next half hour with Jen Edwards-Brink about a new exhibit at the Minnesota State Fair called Cracking the Code of Teen Substance Abuse. And when you think about the fair, you think about all the amazing things that are out there. There are so many educational components out there. I was talking to the Commerce Department, did a really interesting story, actually, of all things Denny Hecker, the imprisoned auto dealer who lost billions of dollars and has been jailed now for almost 7 years, about to get out of prison. Of all things, he has a whole bunch of money in a number of accounts in the unclaimed funds accounts set up at the Department of Commerce. In other words, if you've ever kind of moved around, you may have had an account or may have moved, you know, to a different address, and somebody may have tried to send you a check, and normally it's for a small amount of money. But if they can't find you, then it goes back to the state of Minnesota, and it's called the unclaimed funds. So you can actually go to the Department of Commerce and, you know, Google Minnesota Department of Commerce, unclaimed funds, or if you ever lived in another state, that's another good one to look at too. And you can actually go to the Commerce Department at their exhibit at the state fair and Google, you know, put in your name and see at the state fair if you have any unclaimed funds sitting over there at the Department of Commerce. So there's a lot of things like that at the state fair that you might not realize are actually out there. So we're going to talk about that new exhibit at the state fair. Then coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, we are going to talk about with Joe Nathan, the executive director for the Center for School Change, about how high school kids can get free college credit. In other words, mom and dad, you could be saving a lot of money if they take these courses, and more kids are taking advantage of it. So keep it right here, folks. You're listening to News Radio 830 WCC. 6:16 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Great to be with you on a Saturday night. Well, you may have heard about the controversy surrounding the Mayo Clinic pulling back services in Albert Lea, and folks in Albert Lea are not happy about it. Just a few seconds here, we're going to be joined by Brad Ahrens, who is a spokesperson for Save Our Hospitals in Albert Lea. But I do want to read some of the statement that our producer Susan Blanche sent to me today from the Mayo Clinic, explaining sort of their point of it. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's long. But it says, access to high-quality health care has been at the core of our mission since the Mayo brothers founded the clinic more than 150 years ago. It's a belief that we share with people in Albert Lea, and it's precisely why we must move forward. The challenges facing health care, including changing demographics, technology advances, and a severe shortage of health professionals, are happening at an extremely rapid pace. Within this challenging environment, We have a responsibility to deliver the best quality care possible. We have a duty to act now so that patients continue to receive the high quality care they deserve. Again, joining us right now, Brad Ahrens. He's a spokesperson for Save Our Hospitals in Albert Lea. Brad, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right. Tell us exactly what is the situation and what changes is Mayo proposing?
Back in mid-June, Mayo announced that they were going to take away all birthing, inpatient stays, inpatient surgeries, or ICU. This was not something that the community had any input on. It was something that was announced in mid-June. Aside from the reduction in care to our citizens, I mean, we're very concerned that from a viability standpoint, that really impairs the city of Albert Lea. I mean, for example, I mean, Mayo just received $585 million from the state of Minnesota for the city of Rochester in order to be a more viable community for a destination health center in Rochester. And now taking these vital services away from Albert Lea really inhibits not only the care, but the ability for Albert Lea to compete for new jobs, for new businesses.
So you're saying the chance of a new company or, you know, relocating to Albert Lea is diminished because of this shrinking of services?
Greatly. Okay. I mean, when you look at the communities around Albert Lea and what we have to compete with for new businesses to come to Albert Lea, it really puts us in a in a tough situation.
Let me ask you, Brad, what other options are there for somebody who wants to have their baby in Albert Lea? If you're from Albert Lea or the surrounding area and you're going to have a baby, I would think you'd want to have it in your hometown.
Albert Lea is a community of 18,000 people, so it's not, you know, it's not a community of less than 10,000. And our hospital provides service, is a full-service acute care hospital today. And it provides services not only to the 18,000 residents of Albert Lea, but all of Fremont County. And there's even two counties in Iowa that basically send their population up to Albert Lea. All told, Albert Lea services over 50,000 people. And so it's not a small hospital. It's a hospital that normally has 350 births per year. And to take all of this away from us is not only, you know, as I said, inhibiting care to a large population, but also putting us in a distinct disadvantage as a city.
When is this all supposed to take effect?
There's a timeline. When the Mayo came out with it in mid-June, they had a set timeline. And it starts, our ICU is set to move on over to Austin on October 1st. And then from there, there's a timeline that then starts to move outpatient surgeries and services. And then eventually the last to leave would be birthing babies, and that would be the first part of 2020.
And what, you know, drive time Austin Albert Lea, I mean, it's not that far.
It'd be 23 miles from the Albert Lea Hospital to the Austin Hospital.
Okay. And then the drive time to Rochester is longer. I know that.
Yeah, that's an hour.
Right.
That's an hour. But when you look at it, I mean, a lot of our services end up in Rochester today. I mean, that's already happened. You know, our hospital was purchased by Rochester in the mid-1990s and then merged a couple years ago with the Austin Hospital. At that time, in the mid-1990s, there were bylaws put in place that this type of thing could never happen without the community's approval. And then when they merged Albert Lea and Austin together, those bylaws magically disappeared. And now those were put in place so that nothing like this could happen to the city of Albert Lea. And now through this merger with Austin and Albert Lea, it's being moved over to Austin, which doesn't sound like a big issue, but it is a big issue. I mean, you know, those 23 miles, when you're
When you're in labor,
baby. Yeah,
yes.
And it's mid January, I mean, it might as well be 100 miles. And when you look at some of the population that regularly goes to Albert Lea Hospital down in the western part of our county, or down in to the Worth and Winnebago counties, which are actually Iowa counties. But, I mean, that services employers like Winnebago Industries. And now you have you have people that are already driving 25 miles, and now they've got to drive another 23 miles to get over to over to Austin. So it's not a small thing.
Right, and I see what you're saying. 23 miles right now is very different than 23 miles in January or February when it's minus 20 and there's a storm down there, because I've driven in your wonderful area when there have been storms and when it's blowing, and it is amongst the most treacherous areas anywhere because it's so open. And it is very difficult. Are they saying, though, that if there is an emergency and somebody is in labor, they're not going to turn them away at the hospital in Albert Lea?
We will have an emergency room. Okay. We will have an emergency room. So that baby could be born in Albert Lea, but then it would have to be transferred over. You know, if the stay is one night or whatever, then they'd have to transfer it over to Austin. Which, when you think about it, because we won't have any inpatient hospital beds, so when you think about it, I mean, then you have an ambulance ride. I mean, it just adds to the cost of our health care. We in southern Minnesota, in southeastern Minnesota, we have the highest health insurance rates in the state of Minnesota. That's because of one reason. That's because Mayo Clinic. That's because of the cost structure of Mayo Clinic and the fact that they will not negotiate with Blue Cross and Health Partners and Medica, like all the other health systems do, to discount their fees. And so not only do we today pay, you know, have high health care costs and high health insurance costs, but now this world-class health care that they brag about, now, you know, it's not coming true in anything but if you're in Rochester or Mankato or Austin today. All the other satellites are going to, I fear, fall to the same fate that Albert Lea does.
What, Brad, what is there any sort of wiggle room in terms of, you know, perhaps agreeing to give up one service and hold on to another, or is that just not an option?
Today, Mayo's answer is no. Our goal is to have a delay. We'd like a 90 to 120 day delay, which we have all the major politicians on our side, from the governor to the lieutenant governor to the attorney general, have all said that is what Mayo should do. The public is on our side. AARP has sided with the citizens in the community of Albert Lea on this issue. I mean, when Mayo did this, they didn't even do an economic impact study on what would happen to Albert Lea when they made this decision. They admitted it. This was without any economic impact study. It was without any health impact study. And to get something like that done is not something that can, you know, just takes a couple weeks. That takes several months. And what we want to have happen is we need a delay so that we can determine what the impact is going to be to the community, our citizens, and the people outside of Albert Lea that use our hospital routinely.
What is there in terms, and I know that the governor's put out statements, I know that a number of political figures have put out, you know, statements in support of the citizens. Has that made any difference at all?
We will see. I think this next week is going to be a critical week for our movement. I really do. I mean, we are hoping that that the lieutenant governor will follow through on her statements, on her commitment when she came down here. And I mean, she was just here 2 days ago and said that there should be a delay. The governor has expressed concerns. The lieutenant governor has told us that what we need to do as a city is we need to determine what we want our hospital to look like, get the data from not only Mayo, but also from other like hospitals that have a similar fingerprint as Albert Lea, and then hire a forensic healthcare accountant that can do a pro forma to look at our hospital, because Mayo claims that it can't make any money. But, you know, it's made money. Has it made money over the last couple of years? It hasn't really made money since they merged it with Austin. And we want to do a study, somebody independent that can sit back and say, okay, let's look at Albert Lea, and let's look at the births, the operations, the overnights, the routine care that is provided there. And for a hospital that brings in $150 million of top-line revenue a year, is there a reason that it is losing money today? Or is it because of excess costs that are applied to our hospital because of the Mayo way of doing it?
What about their point that the number of professionals, top-level professionals, medical care professionals, it's difficult to sustain that in a smaller community?
Well, there's no question that I think that is an issue in rural health care.
Absolutely.
But there's also no question that if you go and you talk to our doctors, and we are lining up some of these doctors that have retired and have talked about the reasons why they feel that doctors are not attracted to small towns under the Mayo system. And it has a lot to do with how those doctors are actually treated. You know, a lot of those doctors, you know, end up having to travel. They have to travel between these different locations. Instead of just saying, okay, I work at Albert Lea, they're going to end up, you know, working a third of their time in Albert Lea, a third of their time in Austin. You know, and doctors would just as soon stay in one location today.
Like most of us would.
Yeah.
You know, anything.
You know, it's, I mean, they already have very tenuous hours, you know, and so to say that you have to not only work in Albert Lea, but then you have to travel to Austin, travel to Owatonna, those are things that are just not attractive.
Right. Let me ask you,
to the medical profession today.
Brad, what is the next step here? What's the next, you know, mark here in terms of this effort to get this delayed?
Well, our goal is to get a delay, to have the governor, the lieutenant governor, and the AG basically talk to Mayo and say, you know, the politicians are with Albert Lea, the public is with Albert Lea, and you need to at least give Albert Lea, since you did a poor job, you were a poor corporate citizen of how you went about this process and released the notification without any input from Albert Lea, you need to at least give them 90 to 120 days so that we can get our act together and study what this is going to mean to the citizens and the community of Albert Lea. And what our reaction should be on a go-forward basis.
All right. Well, Brad Ahrens, spokesperson for Save Our Hospitals in Albert Lea, thank you so much for coming on this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Appreciate your time. Obviously, a debate that we will continue to follow. We are going to take a break. We got some weather for you. And we're also going to talk later this hour about the new exhibit at the State Fair, Cracking the Code of Teen Substance Abuse, what to watch for, what to know about the kinds of things that are happening with our teenagers today. So keep it here. You're listening to News Radio 830 W.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is 6:36 in the Twin Cities. Well, a lot of you may actually be in your cars, either going to or from the Minnesota State Fair. And obviously, there are a lot of fun things to do out there, the great food, the rides, all the exhibits. And a lot of them are really educational or provide insight into educational opportunities or even problems that we have in our society. And there is actually an exhibit at the fair, an interactive exhibit out at the State Fair called Cracking the Code of Teen Substance Abuse. From Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. And Jen Brink Edwards, I apologize for getting the name wrong initially when I set up this segment, is joining us right now. And she is the director of communications and the creator of this interactive exhibit. Jen, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, tell me, first of all, where is the exhibit at the State Fair? Jen, I think we may have lost Jen. Jen, are you there? Okay, well, we're going to try and get Jen back on the line here. Teen Challenge, oh, we do have Jen back on the line. Jen, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, I'm not sure what happened there. But tell us, where is this exhibit at the State Fair?
It's in the Education Building. When you walk in, you go straight to the back, and we're right along the back wall, and you can't miss us.
Okay, and it's an interactive exhibit. And usually, I love the Education Building because there's a lot of really cool stuff in there. Tell us about why you decided to have an exhibit at the State Fair and an interactive exhibit at that.
Well, we've been at the fair for a long time. We love being at the fair, educating people about drugs and the problem that drugs are in Minnesota is a big deal for us. And prevention is even a bigger deal. So every dollar that you spend in prevention, it's been proven to save $18 in treatment later.
Wow.
So, yeah.
All right. And in terms of, describe sort of how the exhibit works and how it's sort of different this year.
Sure. It's a very experiential, interactive exhibit. And there are five pieces. One of them is, like you said, called Cracking the Code. And it is actually a digital representation of a teen's bedroom. And there are 12 hiding spots.
And Jen, I think we may be losing you again here. I'm not sure what the problem is with the connection. We're chatting with Jen Brink Edwards. She's the director of communications at the Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. She's also the creator of this interactive exhibit at the Education Building at the State Fair. And Jen, I think we got you back. I'm not sure what the problem is with the line there, but you were saying that and just before you cut out, the exhibit or part of it recreates a teen's bedroom.
Right.
Tell us about that.
There are 10 spots, and then it's a touch screen, so you can touch each spot. And the cool thing is, when it comes up, it shows an image of what the drug may look like hidden, what the drug actually looks like, how it's used, and the other spot that could be hidden in. So really trying to run the gamut for a parent.
Okay. And obviously, tell us about sort of some of the hiding spots that parents might not think about.
Sure. I mean, some of them really blew my mind as we were doing the research and actually talking to teenagers. So one of them is a chapstick bottle, where you dig all the chapstick out and hide pills. One of them is an Arizona tea can that has a hidden cavity inside of it, so you think it's just an empty can.
And Arizona tea, which is a very popular beverage for adults and kids and everyone.
Yeah, and you can buy it on Amazon, so it's really easy to get.
Wow.
And then, places like underneath drawers where you kids would tape stuff up underneath. Water bottles and, backpacks, behind posters, hollowed out books. So a lot of different spaces that teens can hide the drugs under the mattress, but not under the mattress. You would tear a hole and put it up in the box spring.
Oh, wow. Okay. So in case, so even somebody making the bed might not find it.
Right. It's very sneaky.
Right. Right. In terms of what you're seeing at Teen Challenge, and how long has Teen Challenge been? I mean, I feel like it's always been a part of the Twin Cities and helping, young people. But you've been around a long, long time.
We have been in Minnesota for 30 years.
Wow, okay.
And right now we have a teen camp out in Buffalo, just for teen boys. And then we have our Know the Truth program, which is hitting its 15th year, and it's 10th year. And we go into 160 schools a year. We see over 155,000 students. And in many places, we're part of the health curriculum.
Wow. Okay. What are some of the things that changes? Obviously, the opioid epidemic is something that has hit everyone. And certainly it has hit young people as well. tell us what you're seeing with that. I mean, is this hitting teens as hard as it is other people? And also teenagers are far more proficient than most of their parents at using the internet. And one of the really scary things here is that some of these synthetic opioids have been, can be found on the internet, and which is very, very troubling and very scary because they are devastating and can be deadly in just tiny, tiny doses.
They can, yeah. It's there's been 350 overdoses in Minnesotans under the age of 24 in the last 2 years.
Wow.
So that's a lot. And, you know...
And you say the overdoses, you mean just overdoses in general, or are you talking fatalities?
Drug overdoses. Mm-hmm. Fatalities.
Fatalities. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that means, and I'm sure there are many others that have overdosed and thankfully not died. So,
right.
I mean, that's a huge number. What are some of the things... This is really an epidemic that's hitting kids as well.
It is. I think the things that teens don't understand is that even if your buddy standing right next to you does something and lives, if you do the exact same thing because the physiology is different, you could die. And they don't get that.
How easy are these drugs to get and how expensive mm-hmm. are they?
Well, we actually have a stat out at the fair and a medicine cabinet, but our stat is that 70% of people that use and abuse prescription drugs get them from friends or family. So what they're actually doing is going into medicine cabinets of their grandma, their aunt, their sister, you know, wherever, and taking those drugs out of those cabinets because it's like Percocet and Vicodin, things like that that have been prescribed.
Right. Wow. And in terms of, the people that are, and what are some of the other, because I assume that there are still also other drugs that kids are getting in trouble with. What are some of the other ones that you're seeing? Or is that really the one that's really raising some of the biggest red flags?
Well, I think the fact that over-the-counter drugs are used pretty often is a little scarier because you can get them a lot easier. There's incidences of kids pouring hand sanitizer into water bottles and drinking it to get a high. So, and we have all that information in our booth. We have a medicine cabinet.
Hand sanitizer?
Hand sanitizer, yes. I know, I can't imagine it, but it happens.
Wow, and I would think that would be, the health consequences of that would be potentially catastrophic, depending on how it's done.
On your stomach and everything, yeah. And, I mean, we're not saying take all this stuff out of your medicine cabinet or take it out of your home, but just be aware and be educated that it can happen.
Wow. What are some of the other things that you're warning people about?
We are, obviously, cough syrup is a big one. Sudafed, that kind of stuff that can be made to, for meth. And really just Adderall, things that are easily, not easily, but often prescribed for teenagers can be borrowed by their friends for a high. Because if somebody doesn't have ADHD and they take Adderall, it's a very different effect on them.
Right. What do people, in terms of the reaction to the exhibit, is there something that really jumps out at people, do you think? Or I suppose different people have different takeaways.
Yeah, I think people really enjoy hearing the stories of our clients and of our graduates. One of the things we have there that I really love is it's a simulation of having a jail visit with two of our clients who are now graduates that had gone to prison, each one of them, for meth. And it's a great story for both of them. They tell the story of how it was kind of recreational, and then they lost control, and then they lost everything. And then there they are behind bars. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. They end up going to Teen Challenge, and or Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge, and they are both graduated and living full lives. But I think what happens is you can really relate to them because they're just normal people who got caught up in something and completely lost control.
Right. Well, and I know certainly with the opioid epidemic, I mean, it can certainly, grab people, and it doesn't seem to let go at all. I know, the number of medical professionals that have gotten, in trouble over this is really alarming as well. In terms of, you know, when somebody comes to you or a teen comes to you, how does the program work? Do you have different kinds of programs? And what's sort of range for, mm-hmm. for young people?
So we have a wide breadth of programs. We have outpatient, we have short-term, and we have residential. So our outpatient and our short-term are both Rule 31 licensed treatments. And then we have our residential treatment, which is 13 to 15 months. And that's
how many months?
It's 13 to 15 months, typically, depending upon the client.
Well, that's a long time.
It is. But if you've been on heroin for 20 years, you need a year or more than a year to change your complete lifestyle. So we also have our boys teen camp out in Buffalo. It's called Lakeside Academy. We are in the process we're part of a school district out there, and so we have teens come. We have 60 beds, and typically teens will stay there for a year and have CDC counseling. And
do they go to school there, or do they go to school in the Buffalo district?
Yep, we have a classroom there on site that they go through, and then they have project-based learning as well, which is like vocational type stuff, like welding, auto work, that kind of stuff.
Okay. And what is the cost of these programs?
It really varies. It really depends. But I will tell you that our residential program, 94% of our residential clients don't pay any out-of-pocket costs.
Wow.
Because it is all covered by just generous donors.
Right. Well, and I know, you know, WCCO-TV, we've done, you know, fundraisers for Teen Challenge, and
you guys are great supporters.
Well, I think it's so important, and certainly, I mean, I know that there are many, many very generous individuals and corporations, you know, around the region that do contribute, which I think is just so wonderful. And to hear that, let me ask you: Do you? Because I think one of I've talked to people at different facilities, and obviously, Minnesota really is the forefront of some of these, you know, rehab centers. What kind of, I don't want to say success, but recidivism rate do you have? I mean, what percentage of people really do seem to emerge and 5 years later they are still clean?
You know, we have thousands of graduates out in communities, churches. We have 30 graduates, around 20 to 30 graduates every single month that go back out into the community, and we make sure they have a place to live, a church to go to, and a job before they can leave. And we have over 90 graduates working at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge alone.
Wow. Okay. And that must be something that really, to see a younger person who's been there and succeeded, mm-hmm. that must be really inspirational for people who are just coming in.
Yeah, I think it's great. You know, they know exactly what to say, what they're going through. And with Know the Truth, what we do is we have younger graduates from the program go into the schools and tell these kids, they don't tell them not to do drugs. They tell them, I did drugs and this is what happened to me. And so it's more like stripping away the glamour and the myths around drugs and making it less of a party thing and making it more into like, here's reality, here's truth. And I think that really resonates with the kids.
We're talking with Jen Brink Edwards. She is the Director of Communications at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge and the creator of this interactive exhibit at the Education Building at the Great Minnesota Get Together. Jen, what ages are we talking about? I mean, what ages should parents, because I think when people think teenagers or drugs, I guess they think of high school. I mean, kids are getting involved in middle school, aren't they?
Yep, we start in middle schools. Definitely. Know the Truth goes into middle schools. We have plenty of inquiries from middle school parents. And again, it's those things like Adderall and Ritalin and things like that they can get from their friends.
Right. And that's why when you hear these, you know, people trying to get, you know, having these roundups of like, you know, collecting these prescription medications, this is the reason why. Obviously, such an important situation, and obviously I hope that a lot of people are coming to check out your exhibit at the State Fair, because it does sound very, very interesting. We certainly appreciate your time this evening, Jen.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right, that's Jen Brink Edwards, again, the Director of Communications at a great, great charity, a great organization, Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge, and she's also the creator of this interactive exhibit out at the Education Building at the Minnesota State Fair. I'm going to be out there tomorrow. with our 10:30 WCCO television show. Senator Amy Klobuchar will be live at our booth at 10:30, and I may just check out the Education Building because I do enjoy going there. I think they've got great exhibits. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. We have much more ahead. You are listening to the one and only News Radio 830 WCCO. It is 6:55 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock, along with studio coordinator Jonathan Lowe. You know, in the Carrier Cooling Studios here, we are surrounded by television monitors with all kinds of sports going on. And Jonathan, who I love working with you, but you are this diehard Kansas City fan. You can't drag the Kansas City out of the kid.
We're not talking about this right now. Oh. We're not talking about this right now. No.
Nah, 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 nah. Anyway, I just, you know, the Kansas City Royals have been very successful over the past few years, and the Minnesota Twins have not. And it's just awfully nice to see the Twins get out to, like, what, a 5-0 lead tonight after one and a half innings against your team, sir.
This nightmare scenario for me.
All right. Well, but you got to love the Twins. They're doing great. All right, folks, much more ahead. We're going to talk with Joe Nathan about the growing trend of young people, high school students, taking college courses. It's saving their parents an awful lot of money. It's a trend that is growing. We'll tell you how you might be able to take advantage of it. That's next on WCCO.